You're writing your life story.
You bet I am.
Am I in it?
You just entered.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast, the show that constantly petitions animal rights organizations to treat eels as hostile, creepy devil snakes. I am Oscar, and with me today is...
Hi, the devil snake? Ralph.
Have you seen A Cure for Wildness?
I won't.
Then you'll know what
probably
I mean.
Watch it.
Devil snakes. That's what they are.
Okay.
Little eely, creepy things. Anyway, and only with me is Roth for the moment. Actually, for the entire show. Luke is not joining us for any of these segments.
He's a fucking lame.
He is a lame.
He's not even going to listen to this episode. That's the best part.
We can say whatever we want about him.
We can say whatever
we could, like,
fuck
literally
we want about him.
Say what he's doing in the Swiss Alps right now.
I'll tell you something right now. What? He'll never be as cool as that guy in Get Out.
What cool.
The friend.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, then. Yeah. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a very long way.
Sorry, I just didn't want to
very
mention
long.
Shit that he does.
Right, right, because he's so, you know, okay. Anyway, he's uncool. He sucks balls. this is episode number 18, and today we will be talking about the Oscar ceremony. I know that it hits Friday, so it'll be exactly 5 days after the ceremony, the wonderfully scandalous ceremony of the Oscars last Sunday.
People got fired, yo.
Yep, and then... this is a first time here, and I'm going to try to do it. I'm not try. I'm going to do it, and hopefully it works out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to do a solo cast
That's
of
right.
A Cure for Wellness because these two motherfuckers couldn't see it.
Okay. Rephrase that question.
Yeah.
Rephrase that statement. I could have seen it.
Yeah.
I totally forgot I was supposed to see it. Mm-hmm. Hypothetically.
And then Luke didn't even tell me he didn't have any theaters until like 2 days
before
today.
The thing is,
today.
I thought Luke was going to watch it with you and you guys were going to do that review for sure.
I thought so too, but
because he even said it, I'm going to watch A Cure for Wellness over here. And
right.
I was like, all right, cool, perfect.
That's what he told me too.
So, and then he's like, oh, we don't have it. Thanks for telling me a day before.
Yeah.
Right. And then I was like, whatever movies you want me to watch, I can try to watch them, any movie. Like,
it's okay.
So.
That's okay. So I will do a solo cast. But more importantly, Ralph and I did see Logan. We saw it tonight, Thursday night screening.
Yeah.
And it will be released for you guys literally the day of release or day after release. So we're going to review Cure for Wellness, Logan, and the Oscar ceremony. Feedback can always be sent to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Otherpodcast.com. Again, that's otherpodcast.com is our main website where everything we have under the sun is on there.
I want to say it's our only website also.
That's true. That's true. Although, you know, if you go through iTunes, then you kind of have our own little thing there. I know it's not a website, but it's a corner. What do you want from me?
Mm-hmm.
Dying of Fire. Anyway, let's get started on what we've been watching. How about that, Rob? Yeah? You want to do that?
Okay.
All right. So what I've been watching, I'll start first on this one, because, you know, I thought you didn't have one, so I was going to go first. And
so it's
like,
not the Before trilogy?
It's not. I haven't seen them yet. I mean, I haven't seen them again yet.
What do I buy you things for?
What do you want me to do?
God. Watch things.
Watch them immediately after I get them?
No. Invite me.
Invite you? Fine. When do you want to watch them?
I don't know. Whenever you start talking about what we're supposed to be talking about.
Oh, my God.
Did you get there yet?
It's not coming up. It's being a
doo-doo brain? I'll pull it up for you. What is it?
Under the Shadow. Can you pull it up for
me?
I don't know why it's not working. It's so unreliable. This stupid, shitty phone. It's not even this phone, I'm sure. Maybe it is the phone. I have no idea. This is great podcasting material we're doing. Anyway, so I saw this movie called Under the Shadow, which came out last year. I'll give you a description here. As a mother and daughter struggle to cope with the terrors of the post-revolution, war-torn Tehran of the 1980s, a mysterious evil begins to haunt their home. Yes, that is the simplistic version of that. And it stars...
That one person.
Oh my God, I'm gonna fucking butcher these names. I'm just gonna butcher the name two actors.
Oh, this
names.
Is the best.
Nargis Rashidi and Avin Mansat. No, Manshadi. Or Manshadi. I don't think it's Manshah. I think Manshadi. Fuck. Anyway, it's written and directed by Babak Anvari. And that's all. That's the extent
that's,
of that.
That's the extent of everything you're doing?
Yep. Of names,
I would
anyway.
Have fucked the shit out of these up.
No, yeah, I know you would have. Under the Shadow is a pretty cool movie, Ralph. It's definitely an. Oh my God! I probably just fucked it up. I'm gonna be so white here in first
white
or ignorant. That's what I meant to say. Ignorant.
Did you see this by your job?
It's at Netflix.
Oh, Netflix. You said it last year. Never mind.
It came out last year. It's on Netflix right now. You can watch it. Everyone can watch it. It's my ignorance is that I don't remember if it's an Iranian film or an Iraqi film. It's Tehran in Iraq, right, I think?
Sure.
Sure?
Yes.
That you sound very sure.
I'm very positive of myself.
Anyway, wherever it is, and I apologize in advance because that's two different countries, obviously, but they both sound the same almost, except for one letter.
Oh, my God. Keep going.
Anyway, so I'm going to keep going. So it's a slow burn haunting film where it's literally the culture, it's their version of whatever we would call a haunted movie here, right?
Okay.
It preys on desires and particularly like a little bit of voodooism in the way that what your most prized possession is the sacrifice and the first thing that goes as far as when the demon's gonna take over.
So everybody's iPhone.
No, in this case, it's in the 1980s, so no. It's like the girl's doll.
Okay.
Favorite doll.
Cool.
And the mother, actually, the first half of the movie is more like a drama about, like, this poor woman who, in her college years, was a rebel against the government and was doing, like, causes and, you know, not like blowing up buildings,
yeah,
but like going to, like,
fight the power that be, yeah,
like, you know, not riots, what do you call them,
protesters,
protesting, there you go. They were doing a lot of protesting, and apparently it bit her in the ass, like, later on in life when she tried to go back to school. She tries to go back to school for medical degree and they won't let her because of that past, and so she's, you know, feeling pretty shitty about it. Her husband gets sent out to mandatory service during the middle of this war, yeah, where they get, which Tehran is bombed like every other day and they have to always hide in the basement.
Well, at least they get one day off.
At one point, one of the bombs actually penetrates the building, but doesn't detonate, and it's just hanging there. Yeah, so all this is going on, very realistic stuff. And in the middle of it, like, slowly but surely, you start hearing these stories about the little girl and this new boy that's living in the building, telling her these stories about the...
So on top of terror and war.
Right, on top of terror and war, that there's this demon that's haunting.
It's awesome.
And that it's
not really,
coming,
yeah,
in to prey on their essential weaknesses.
Plus side, free bomb.
Free bomb. That's true. No, I did take it out. We gotta leave it there. It's not a fucking conversation.
You never
piece.
Know when you need it.
I guess. Yeah. So it's an interesting movie where it definitely like slowly progresses to other things, and it's all based. Nothing is a big surprise, and the big scary parts of the film. I'm not saying like the ones that just happen rapidly, but they're based on confusion. They're based on like the fear of the characters that you understand already by that point. Like there's this one scene I'm gonna describe to you real quick where at this point everyone in the building has left except for these two people. So when the bomb alarm goes off, it's just them two in the basement. And I guess that's maybe a spoiler because it happens in the third act or something. But you know, everyone's slowly leaving.
Sure,
like we're gonna fucking get out of Tehran, and she's like, no, I'm gonna stay. Anyway. And she's going down there with her daughter, and then she hears her daughter screaming up at the apartment and goes running up there thinking that she's wrong. She goes up there, and it was actually a trick the demon tricked her to lock her in the apartment, and her daughter's left alone in the basement. And like it's just like crazy intense fear in that moment,
okay,
of how it happens, and it's really cool. And I guess that's all I'll explain. I mean, it's more, I think if you're understanding more of that culture, maybe the demons and the Shida, and not the Shida, Shida is the main actress. I forgot the name of the demon, they mentioned it. Maybe that stuff makes more sense, like the way maybe some Mexican tradition make more sense for us.
Right, of course.
Yeah, so, but even without that stuff, it's kind of universal in the familiar fear of losing your life. So, yeah, it's Under the Shadows, pretty good. I like it a lot. It's on Netflix. I recommend it for anyone to watch it. It is subtitled, so if you don't like subtitles, definitely don't watch it. All right, Raph, you have one for us?
You thought this was a short, what's it called, introduction or synopsis of the movie. I got a shorter one for you.
Ooh.
I'll read it first, and then I'll tell you the movie.
All right.
An uncle is asked to take care of his teenage nephew after the boy's father dies. I've watched Manchester by the Sea before the Academy Awards, and I'm glad I did,
yeah,
because of the fact that I made educated guesses in my picks, even though I lost. Regardless, this movie is starring, oh man, I can never get these names right, Casey Affleck.
Such a cock.
Okay, Michelle Williams, Kyle Chandler.
Lucas Hedges.
Hedges. Yeah, and we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And obviously, the funny thing is that when other people mispronounce it, we treat them like shit. Or,
right, exactly. Sure. This is directed by Kenneth Lonergan. And is written by him also. Produced by Matt Damon, because everybody knows that, apparently. Jeez, whatever.
And made by Amazon Studios.
Yeah, the big thing. This is a very powerful movie. Very depressing. I guess I would say that as well.
But, were the warnings sufficient?
Yeah, I would say the warnings were sufficient.
The hype of the warnings of depression
I would have left that movie feeling the same way had you told me or not. Mm-hmm. Maybe I would have felt it. Maybe it would have lingered a little bit more. But I think overall I was just like, yeah, it's kind of fucked up.
Yep.
But at the same time, I wasn't, you know, the movie ends in a pretty decent note for me. This is, like I said, it's a very powerful movie, all performance. And I think, Casey Affleck does an amazing job with just how he portrays this New England, persona, this Boston guy, this East Coast person who is supposed to be detached from everything and be a man's man and know everything about how to fix everything in life, which he does know how to fix everything in life. Go figure.
He's like a super, right?
He's a soup. Yeah, he's a janitor, right? But he can fix anything. He knows how to fix anything. He knows how to do anything. Anything that in life that you need to do, he knows how to do it, right? He's like the ultimate Boy Scout or whatever. But he's a man's man, right? And that's exactly what he is. But he's also a loving person, right? It's just that he doesn't show his emotion on his sleeve like those type of people don't. I think that's a big thing about Boston people or East Coast people in general. It's like, yeah, they don't get like, you know, they don't cry at shit. They don't do stuff like that. You know, they hold themselves back because they see a certain version of a man that they need to be. And
so you think the movie is playing into that?
Yeah, I think the movie is playing into
those stereotypes.
Yeah, I would say so, because even everybody around him who wants to show emotion, like you have like the one guy who does show a lot of emotion, he's by no means is he considered a pussy or anything like that, but at the same time he is kind of looked at like, all right, bro, you can take it a little easy, like we get it, and everybody else around him is just like, yeah, like even the women around him aren't as emotional as they would be, I think, anywhere else. So this is a really, it's portrayed very well overall in the acting, not just by our main guy, Casey Affleck, but by everybody else who also plays. Like I said, it's just powerful performances overall.
You think he deserved the win there, the Oscar?
I think at the very least
you're not unhappy with him.
I'm not unhappy with the win at all. I mean, I thought it could have gone either way, for him or Denzel. I don't know. I mean, I could have gone either way.
I really wanted Philip Seymour Hoffman to win this year.
Yeah, me too. But just didn't act anymore.
No.
You know, he's getting lazy.
Just nominated for the movies he hasn't been nominated yet for.
Right. I just think there's nobody else competing with him. Everybody knew it was Denzel and Casey Affleck that were the runners here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just powerful performances. I don't want to ruin anything about the movie besides it being depressing and what the quick synopsis was of the movie. It's shit that he has to go through. It's life, you know? It's a screenshot in life.
How do you feel Michelle Williams is like two scenes?
I felt that she had two scenes and I got nothing out of her.
You get nothing out of her?
There's this thing about where they do that one scene where they show it everywhere because that's the scene she's
in. Well, that's the scene that she's in for more than a third.
Sure, sure. I mean, she's in there for more than two scenes, but
I know.
Like,
just flashbacks.
That's one scene where she gets to there. I don't know. I felt like, okay, if you wanted to show me more, if you wanted to be me more attached to this person.
I think if we were reviewing this movie, I would go into it, but I think there is a lot there for me that I saw.
You know what? I get it. I get where it's coming from, but I think the reaction. The person we're paying attention to in that scene isn't Michelle Williams. It's still Casey Affleck.
No. I don't mean it that way. I mean in terms of him. I think what she does to bring it out in him.
Sure. There is that powerful response.
That's what the supporting character does.
No, I get it. I get that. But it's like it doesn't justify for the lack of screen time. I don't know.
No, it's good. Not for you. Okay, I get it. It's all good.
Yeah.
I just really wondered.
I was like, why is she nominated? And I was like, okay. I mean, yeah, it was a really powerful scene.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I would have chosen, I would choose way different people from everybody here. Very few I would leave. Which brings us to let's segue into the Oscar ceremony here.
Right.
I'm not going to pick. I'm like, oh, man, who would I pick? We did that last time, essentially. We didn't say who over who, but we basically said what we wanted.
Sure.
But I'm looking at all these, and very few of these nominations, especially for the acting categories, would I actually keep as them, because I'm like, there are way better movies with way better like hard work going on in them. Right. But that's neither here nor there. So let's talk about the ceremony. What did you think of Kimmel and shit?
I mean, overall, I think Kimmel did an okay job. I don't think he did anything horrendous.
Yeah, I think he's like...
some things were a little bit overplayed. The Matt Damon stuff, obviously, like, in the beginning, it felt okay.
Mediocre.
But if you don't know anything about the history with him, about Matt Damon...
So, I've heard a lot of stuff about this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know nothing about it. That's how little I've seen The Late Show.
So, did it fall... Yeah.
No, it didn't fall flat. I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. I think the best parts were he's making fun of Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Just because one actor I've known his entire career is Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Since the Kevin Smith stuff. And he was only in that one short thing, you know. That's how far back, and Good Will Hunting and all that shit. So, yeah, I know Matt Damon's movies.
Okay.
So, like, I just thought it was funny as hell, and I gotta be joke. But maybe for people who know the Kimmel fake hate, maybe it is overdone for you guys, and I just didn't feel that.
No.
But, like, some of the stuff I didn't really care for, like the bus tour thing, what the hell was that about?
You know, that was a bit that...
Why do they keep doing this bit thing?
I don't understand.
They did the thing with the pizza 2 years ago or something,
yeah,
and I'm like, what? Why?
I don't get it.
What's with this feeding the audience shit? I don't know. I like the candy stuff falling from the thing, but, like, twice now. Also, was it a bit not very cool the way he did the Lion King thing with the lion actor?
Yeah, that was not cool.
Right?
That felt weird because the kid, I think, didn't even understand what he was doing.
No, I'm sure. I think he did. He had to have permission by parents. I think he knew.
Yeah.
But poor kid. What the fuck is he gonna do? Say no?
Yeah. It was.
I kind of wanted him to squirm away. Like, get off me, older.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. It was a little weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I just didn't. I didn't buy that. I'm sorry. But otherwise, he was okay. He wasn't. It was like a movie of the week. Like, I'll probably forget
sure.
He hosted it last,
bit,
next year. But he wasn't.
This is the thing about that bit that with the tour bus people is that he's supposed to further lead that on into his show the next episode. So, like, he's the next day he's bringing those tourists onto the show, and like,
did he actually do that?
No, because they were like, oh, we had other things to talk about or whatever. And other shit that they brought up. Instead, they went a different route because of the fact that of what happened at the very end of the show.
Right on. My favorite line, though, he said, was white men are saving jazz and black women are saving NASA, which is, that was funny. That's not the quote, but it's something like that.
Yeah. Do you think there's a missed opportunity on his part? He thanks President Trump, FYI. And this, in his speech, in his monologue, his little thing.
I don't remember, but I'm sure, I know he mentions him, yeah.
Yeah, he thanks him for, like, making the Oscars not feel racist anymore.
Oh, that's right, I do remember that.
I thought it was a little funny of a joke,
yeah.
Right? But, like, at the same time, it was just like, okay.
Well,
that's his big mention.
It's like a room full of, like, fucking progressive, way different people than Trump's demographic. Like, it's just... It's the opposite. It's an anti-Trump rally. I mean, it's
sure.
By nature, arts in general will breed these kind of people. So it's just like you have to make fun of them. Like if I was a writer there,
but the big bit that I liked was that he actually tweets at Donald Trump. He's like, "Hey, you up? You haven't tweeted at us."
Yeah,
that was a funnier
that was
tweet.
Funny.
That
yeah.
was you know. And,
I think the more we discuss about him watching the news and tweeting back, the less he'll do it. I think we just gotta stop like. Again, that's another camera shy thing. Don't tell him there's a camera in the room, and he'll respond. You know, that's what I think.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the wins and what was your favorite stuff that you love to see winning, and then vice versa, what you hated or disliked.
I appreciated both screenplay wins. So Moonlight winning for screenplay.
Yeah, for sure, and Manchester.
Manchester, yeah. I overall enjoyed them.
I really wanted The Lobster to win.
Yeah, I would say, but you know what?
Because it's original screenplay. I can't think of a more original movie.
I can't think of a more original
The Lobster.
Yeah, for me neither. But at the same time,
although I haven't seen.
I mean, that was room. Like, sorry, that was like bottom horse to bet on. Like,
no, I knew it wasn't going to win.
Right.
I just wanted that.
Sure,
movie,
of course.
Yeah. I'm happy Moonlight won because I know nothing about Lion. I haven't seen Hidden Figures, but I just know that we'll never win.
Right. Although one of our friends who came to watch the thing was fucking loving Lion, everything about Lion.
Oh my!
All night,
James?
All night was Lion.
Yeah.
I was like, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
That's how he lost. He was like, Lion, everything.
Right.
I really wanted Arrival to win over Moonlight myself. But not like. Like, Moonlight's a great second pick, literally, second. I just think that the way, because I read that short story too, the Arrival one, the one it's originally based on. And it's like, it's amazing how they extrapolated that entire screenplay from that short story.
Yeah.
And I really loved it. But I don't know nothing about Moonlight other than it's a play.
Let's talk about the big one, okay?
The big one? The best picture?
No.
Are we talking about
the big
scandal
one.
Now?
No, let's talk about the big one.
All right.
Okay.
What? This is a joke. Just say the joke.
Suicide Squad has an Oscar.
Oh my god, that's so awful. What a fucking
how do you not give it to anything else?
Anything else. I mean, I haven't seen The Man Called Uwe.
Neither have I.
Yeah. I downloaded it, but I haven't seen it.
Right.
Star Trek Beyond. Perfectly awesome makeup. What the fuck is wrong?
So this is the argument.
And those
this
three?
Is the argument I had. That's okay. Hold on. This is the argument I have. Apparently Suicide Squad had more people to get put makeup on like crazy whatever than they did in the Star Trek one. Star Trek only had like two people or whatever compared to the...
Shouldn't you give it to them more because they were more devoted to make alien species out of nothing?
Right.
These guys are based off shit that they know. They had schematics and blueprints. Listen, they had more people.
Right.
Fuck them.
Right,
yeah. Sorry. Fuck them.
Just letting you know. So yes. They've been... there's memes everywhere about like the Oscar... what's it called? Suicide Squad has an Oscar, just like as many Oscars as what's it called, Citizen Kane,
and Arrival,
and like anything, like
right. Hacksaw Ridge has more Oscars than Arrival. What world is this? Which the editing? I know people were saying like the editing's pretty good. I don't think the editing was that good.
I thought the editing
what
was.
The fuck?
I complained about it at the end.
I know.
I could
before we knew who was gonna win.
But I saw it nominated, and I was like, "Fuck this movie! I'm not nominated." I'm not
right.
Even,
and that's why we both lost that point because we both didn't choose it.
It's so stupid.
We're like, that's clearly not going
to
win.
Right. I think they're just looking for something to give it. Yeah. I don't know.
Mel Gibson.
Are the academies like forgiving everybody or something?
They rather do that. It's not like they love to hate people.
Right. I just like.
But some of these filmmakers, I mean, David O. Russell, Kubrick, and.
Why isn't he a.
Gibson, they're like known to be kind of fucked up and angry, mean motherfuckers and drink a lot and shit. Like, they're like.
I guess.
It's not great, you know. Let's talk about. What do you think of Zootopia over Moana? Or over any. I mean, I've only. Or Kubo, I guess.
I mean, I'm pretty sure you're in the same boat as Kubo should have.
I'm not totally sad about any of it because I like all three a lot.
I like
I've
all
seen
three.
Zootopia
I like all
twice,
three as well.
Moana twice, Kubo twice.
I just think, you know, Zootopia is saying, Oscars, you know, we wear the blue ribbon and we like cops.
No, I think it's more about the idea that we're all equal, right? And
I get it. The message over
peace.
I guess the message overall is more that.
Yeah, I think it's more universal. Moana's story was more about Moana, not a universal story.
Sure.
Maybe that's why.
Yeah.
That's
about a princess. Uh-huh.
And Kubo is much stranger. It's like literally an Eastern philosophy. It's harder to comprehend to audiences here.
It's religion. Meh.
Yeah. No, unfortunately, right? For a lot of people. Documentary, what do you think of OJ? Our beloved OJ winning?
I mean, like...
Was that obvious for us? I mean, I did. It was my number one choice.
It was obvious for me.
Okay, good. Me too. Because I really thought that 13th or I Am Not Your Negro was going to win. Because I just heard more
I honestly
buzz
think
out of them.
13th, if 13th did come out early in the year, but if I heard I Am Not Your Negro is like a pretty really good movie.
It's theaters right now, yeah.
I think if that movie came out earlier and it would have like settled in a little bit more for people, I probably would have been a better contender against OJ, but OJ was just like literally OJ year for 2016. The 2015 was
people
the year.
Versus OJ too.
Well, 2015 was the year where they were allowed to take all the transcripts out or use them or whatever. And then 2016,
and then the artists went crazy.
Yeah,
the artists went crazy with everything.
Yeah,
I can't wait when all the papers of JFK assassination comes out and see what's going to happen then. And also for documentary short, the White Helmets one. The second the White Helmets, the day after the Oscars, I should say, Netflix put it up on their thing. You want to watch this? Put it on your list? And I did.
Yep.
I did. I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it yet either, but I knew it was going to win.
So,
because as our friend James was saying, war usually wins. I go, yeah, but this is war and helping people. In the
yeah,
war.
Because four of these are war, by the way.
Yep.
Watani, My Homeland, and Extremis. Extremis. I think they're all war. Let's do a little bit of the foreign language. We knew none of these, but The Salesman, the political movie, won. And I know that's unfair to call it that. I haven't seen The Salesman. Asghar Farhadi has won two Oscars now, just from the foreign picture. You know how rare that is? For not only like the same country having that movie chosen for the best foreign language nomination of that year, but also by the same filmmaker, and that he has to win twice. That's really rare. I think that might be a first. Maybe.
Good for
him. For Fellini, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah.
Like 50 years ago, right? Right. So The Salesman won. I'm really glad I want to see it. Really bad. But it is the PC choice because of this, you know, the whole Iran scandal and Trump.
I mean, obviously it's a good movie probably, but...
I'm just wondering how much of that factored in or not. I'm just curious.
Interesting.
Let's go with the director. What do you think of the youngest director?
Mel Gibson didn't win. That's all we needed to happen.
Right. Thank God for that. He was never going to win. But then that's what I said about editing. I really, yeah.
Youngest director.
For me, it was Moonlight or Arrival. I wanted. But La La Land, I'm not unhappy about that.
You know what? I honestly think he did a good job. Yeah, exactly. And I honestly think they did it because they weren't going to give it Best Picture.
You just said it. So what do you think of that scandal?
I thought that very, very nice of everybody on La La Land to
that was great,
to just be humble about it and give it up.
And by the way, I'm going to say this right now. We're not those kind of people that relish when bad things go wrong or bad things happen.
No, I honestly...
That's really embarrassing. It's awkward. And for the most part, they handled it with grace.
I can't stand watching stuff like that either, but...
They handled it with grace.
My biggest problem, though, was Moonlight went up there, and I didn't even know what they said.
I certainly don't remember what they said. I remember the producer of La La Land saying, like, hey, we didn't win. He was, like, trying to, like... be clear to the audience what's happening, which is very cool, instead of like an announcer. And Faye Dunaway just did not understand what the hell. What's the other old guy? Famous actor. They're from Bonnie and Clyde. He's Clyde.
Yeah. She's Bonnie.
I know she's Bonnie. Fuck, I forgot his name. Shit. Anyway, because he understood the whole thing. And he was trying to stall and trying to get out of it, and then she just blurted out.
Warren Beatty. Is it Beatty? Isn't it Beatty?
Everyone calls it Beatty, so.
Why?
It sounds like Beatty, right?
Right.
It's Beatty
it's
fuck.
Written like Beatty. It's not Beatty. Anyways.
Yeah.
He just didn't know what to do. What he needed to do would have been like, I apologize, but we got the wrong card. I think he needed to say that.
I think whatever he was doing was the smartest play. I just think that she...
Well, he was stalling for time to see if anybody realized that somebody went wrong and maybe they'll get the right envelope or something.
Right. And she thought it was a bit or something.
I honestly think she didn't even look at what it was, and she just read the bold letters of La La Land, and she just said, La La Land.
Right, yeah.
And then she's like, you read the wrong thing, and she's looking at it later like, holy fuck, I just read La La Land Best Actress.
So... that dude's fired, right? Did you hear about the dude? I heard about...
They fired two people.
The guy who was supposed to hand out the cards, because apparently they have two envelopes for each nominee, for each win.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
One for each side of the aisle. That's another great thing. Here's the really great thing about this year's ceremony, is that every year I learn something, but this year I learned like twice as much stuff about how the Oscars work.
Shit goes fucking wrong, yeah.
Yeah, when shit goes wrong, you know how it works.
These are independent contractors with sealed briefcases. Yeah. With like...
So apparently it's all real. And what I mean by real is that for the longest time, I in the back of my head, I always thought that this whole fucking thing is rigged. And I'm not saying it's not biased. It's very biased.
Sure.
But it's rigged, and the winners know where they're going to win. And maybe they won't know if they're nominated, because I know that's always a surprise for
everyone. There's like three people who know who's going to win.
Right. And then it's actually true. Nobody knows
Nobody
who they're going to win. Because the way La La Land went up there all fucking happy, and I'm poor La La Land people. But like, and then the Moonlight came up, like... they were genuinely surprised. You can't fake that. They're not actors.
Right, exactly.
They're producers. They don't know shit. About acting, anyway. And I was like, this is not rigged.
There's just some slam dunks we know are going to win, you know?
I was kind of happy. Like, oh, okay. All right. I like this now.
Yeah. Well, they fired, I think, also the person who actually knew, because she didn't do anything. So she hears La La Land, and she's just sitting there or standing there, and then someone goes... she didn't react or anything like that until like someone tells her like, I don't think that's supposed to be the card, right? They don't have that card right. And then someone else reacted and she didn't even say anything or something like that.
Right.
One of the people, I think she was just stunned or something. Yeah. And then they fired the guys who, I guess, mixed up the envelope or some crazy thing like that or
something.
Some people got fired.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we were saying when it happened.
Sure,
people getting fired. But it was a very...
A lot of people thought it was a Jimmy Kimmel bit.
Right, that's why he was saying it's not a joke.
He switched the envelope or whatever.
Yep.
And Jimmy Kimmel was actually, because I read an article also, he was about to do another Matt Damon bit. Because he was already with Matt Damon when they announced, La La Land and Moonlight. He's over there. And then And he gets to think he's talking to Matt, I guess, like, I'm going to do this bit with you or whatever. This is how it's going to go down. And he gets called on the mic. He's like, dude, get up there because they're like, that's the wrong thing. He's like, oh, shit. And he leaves.
Right.
And he goes to fucking address it. But and then they didn't do the bit because obviously they just didn't have the time or anything.
Yeah. The lost bit.
The lost bit.
Oh. Anything else on the Oscars you want to talk about? I mean, best episode disappointed. I mean, the worst song got one for best song.
Right.
But soundtrack, I don't mind La La Land winning because it's the best soundtrack probably of the year, I would say. But like, best song, fuck you, man. That song sucks. Fucking song. And again, No Sing Street, I know we already said this, broken record. No Sing Street! what do you think of The Jungle Book winning that visual effects stuff?
I mean, I should have picked it as a win, but yeah. Whatever.
So some stuff.
Cinematography.
I
why
like the
is...
opening. I like the opening. I like the what's his name? Timberlake coming up with the troll song.
Yeah. So they did. Fun. Yeah. And then that was the actual song that they did it for a performance. They didn't have to redo the song or sing it.
Like right. Exactly. Which is why I forgot the. You know. Like,
exactly.
Where's the troll song? What were you gonna say?
I was gonna mention cinematography.
Silence. You mean Silence not getting it?
Silence not getting it. Yeah.
Well, they were never gonna get it. It was like the one nomination.
Yeah.
Nothing will never happen, but La La Land got it, and I guess people were happy about it. And I honestly don't remember the cinematography being that great. Over Moonlight?
Yeah.
No way. Over Arrival? No. Over Silence? No. That's my La La Land's my fourth choice, and the only reason it's not my fifth is because I haven't seen Lion yet.
Right. Yeah, I guess you're right.
So I don't know.
And then also Andrew Garfield getting nominated for Hacksaw Ridge, but not Silence.
Oh my God!
Like. They picked the
role where his moral religious life is easier to understand over the really complex one,
right?
And much more realistic one.
I don't get it.
Of Silence. Anyway, I think that's it for the Oscars. We're gonna cut it forever. This is probably the official tombstone on 2016. I know that we've already done our top 10 and all that jazz, but. You went on.
And all that jazz.
Yep. So this is the official tombstone, the end of 2016 as we know it. The ceremony is done. Done. Send us what you think on all this stuff if you like over at podmoviecast@gmail.com.
Or in a review.
So stay with us. I will be back doing a solo cast, which I will record after we do our recording, Ralph. So I hope. Fully, it does amazing because I have no idea how it's going
to
go.
Can't wait to listen to this.
Oh my God, it's going to be terrible. Anyway, stick with us.
Terribly the best.
Mr. Lockhart, every time I turn around, you're somewhere you're not supposed to be.
I guess I'm lost. I'm just trying to find my way back to my room.
This is the restricted floor. There are signs everywhere. Surely you didn't just wander down here by accident. What is it exactly that you are looking for?
I had a problem with my tooth.
Your tooth?
Actually, it's feeling much better if you could just point me in the direction of my room.
Nonsense. We can't let you get an infection. You must let us take care of you. After all, that's why you're here.
Hey, guys. So, I'm interjecting here. I know you already saw that awesome clip of A Cure for Wellness, but before I begin my solo cast, I'm going to solo promo something for you. I'm going to promote our bonus episodes. I decided to do this thing in the middle of the show instead of like at the beginning and a little bit at the end and not really just kind of throwing it out there. Instead, I'll just say like my 1-2-3 minute spiel and then we'll carry on here. So our bonus episode, the way it works, if you go to otherpodcast.com, you can go to the bonus tab and find out how you can, or donate tab and find out how you can donate to our show. Any donation, anything. I don't know what the lowest amount is because we're not using Patreon. We're not that great or anything. We just started. But like any donation at all, not only will be much greatly appreciated, of course, and it goes to the cost of movie tickets and podcasting fees. Obviously, you know, it'll be a long time before we get any money for real on us. So anyway, all that stuff will be muchly appreciated and we'll get you, every person that donates, will get you a bonus episode of that month. And every month we're going to highlight a new episode. And we're going to record that episode, usually with Ralph and myself only. But if not, maybe I'll do it solo or with Luke sometimes or whatever. And this month, March, this is our first show in March. So I'm going to tell you this early as possible. This is the 3rd of March now. Our bonus episode for March will be a movie called Life, which is that science fiction astronaut thriller that stars Jake Gyllenhaal and Ryan Reynolds and a few other people. That movie looks pretty good. It doesn't look great, but it looks pretty good. It looks like it could be fun. It was hard to pick like which movie I was going to pick for the monthly thing, and I could have gone big with the Kong movie or something bigger, but I want to review this on the main show for you guys. So I decided this kind of meets, you know, it's right in between both worlds of blockbuster and not too much hype either. So Life will be the film we'll be bonusing. So if you want to get that show in advance, because the bonus episodes do get eventually released to the mass public, but they do get released 5 months down the road. So if you don't want to, and it's totally cool if you don't, are not able to donate to our show and in the month of March, then you will hear that episode 5 months down the road. Usually by then, the film will be out on DVD or released to rent or buy or whatever. So that's usually the way it's done. 5 months is a good time. I mean, we're actually hitting the our second month of the bonuses being released from 5 months ago. So we're actually going to get more content out for you guys. And that's what we're here for, to do, to release a lot of content for you guys. And so hopefully we do a good job. And remember, we sell not only our reviews and opinions on the films, but what we really sell is our characters and ourselves and how we react to things and how we see the world. And hopefully that comes off across in a good way. And we hopefully that... maybe some of that generosity can be, you know, thrown back at us, and that'd be kind of cool. It would just give us more incentive to keep going and do better projects, do better marathons, do more content, and we'll all live happily ever after. Maybe. Anyway, so check out Life is a Bonus episode, and now let's get on to our review of A Cure for Wellness. A young man on a mission for the company he works for lands on a mysterious spa and wellness resort with suspicious and dreadful treatments. This is a review for A Cure for Wellness, and this is my first time solo casting because my co-host could not be bothered to watch the film. So regardless, I'm going to try my best here to do this first time thing. I'm breaking my solo casting cherry, so hopefully I won't bleed too much. Sorry for that analogy. I'm already fucking it up, aren't I? Anyway, let's get started here. My initial thoughts of the film, or my overall thoughts without spoiling too much about it, is that this movie is a pretty good movie, or a good movie, I should say, not like super great or anything. It's a good movie with some really great aspects, but unfortunately are also mirrored with some very weak aspects. And the weak aspects really pertain to the script. I'm not saying the lines of dialogue per se. The lines of dialogue is very stylized and feels like very much of its time in the, if you want to call it that. This film takes place in the present day, but in this spa resort up in the, I forget, in the Swiss Alps, I think. All that's happening up there. Like everything, there's no phones there. Everyone dresses like they're, you know, Nurse Ratched. So it's 60s or something. So it feels like he's time traveling, really. When he's there, main character is played by Dane DeHaan, who is amazing in Chronicle. I love them in that movie. Anyway, so he, so the script is the weakest aspect of the movie, and the reason is because everything in this movie is very predictable, and it pretends and it acts like either its audience is stupid, or it acts like its script is strong, which it isn't. In the way the plot twists in the film are shown, or even foreshadowed, are they're basically not even foreshadowing element. There's not even foreshadowing involved. It's like telling you, and then like, I'm telling you the secret now, but I'm really gonna tell you the secret 2 hours later, you know. And it's a lot. It's too little, way too late. And as far as that stuff goes, and I mean. It's strange because obviously you don't know until it's actually revealed for sure 100%. But you know, you watch 100 horror movies, you've seen them all, and I have certainly. And this is definitely a horror movie, at least like a thriller type. And it's I think they're basically the same in many ways. So A Cure for Wellness does fall unfortunately flat on its face about the way it reveals its the true intentions of the bad guy, who the bad guy is, how it works, how. Whatever science-y, monsterific thing is going on and behind the scenes and behind the corridors of this very chilling wellness resort. But the stuff that it does great, and that is the filmmaker, Gore Verbinski, who I've always been a big fan of. This is the reason I saw this film. It's not any of the actors or anything. I mean, Dane DeHaan's pretty cool, but it's not like I go see a movie for him. Gore Verbinski is, I've always been a big fan. I really love Rango. I love the visual style. I think visual style is Verbinski's main shtick. And he definitely pulls it off again here in A Cure for Wellness. I mean, the body horror and the images that you could almost feel like they could be amazing wallpapers on your iPad screen or your computer screen or a fucking framed on your wall over the mantel place, you know? It feels like it could be those images retained so well as art form. And the only reason you wouldn't do it, of course, because it's a horror movie and those images are chilling and will creep you out. And if they don't creep you out, at least a little bit, at least one of those types of images, then they maybe you should check your local psychiatrist, because some of that should happen. So it should have an effect for you. But regardless, so I think Gore Verbinski definitely has not lost his directorial style whatsoever. A lot of the stuff reminds me of The Ring also, the first, the good Ring with Naomi Watts. And other of that stuff. And Pirates movie, of course, for all the faults of the Pirates films that it may have, it does look amazing. They've always looked amazing. And the first three movies are in large part of Verbinski. So, and I didn't see The Lone Ranger, so don't ask me about that. But regardless, so let's talk about spoilers and whatnot here. So the story is essentially... Here's another bad thing about the movie. So it starts off with this associate who is trying to climb the ladder of the corporate ladder of his job. And he just got this corner office and everything's badass. And his colleagues are like sucking his cock because it's so amazing. And there's a little nugget for that, though, because apparently he climbed the ladder with some shadiness to it, right? Which is like understandable because everyone in this corporation at the beginning of the film look very shady, and they don't give a fuck. They look like they'll kill their mother to get a better raise or whatever, you know what I mean? So the movie is very two-dimensional about that stuff, and the movie is also portraying the character to be that way, which makes it hard to kind of... I mean, he is our hero, but he is a hero that I didn't really care for. Yeah, it's almost like a... almost Sunny in Philadelphia character being a hero in a movie. Like, I wouldn't want to see that because they're odious people. Now, he's not that bad, but he starts off that bad. He starts off in a negative light for the audiences, at least for me, because I don't have a corporate ladder to climb to that I will kill my mother for, so therefore I don't want him to be that as my hero. So it kind of starts off with a bad taste, so to speak, thematically and as far as heroes go, on top of the fact that the plot's very, very fucking two-dimensional and you can see right through it. And the first time you see that, actually, on his first day there, he gets a drink of water, and everyone mentions the water. He constantly mentions, oh my God, you guys drink water all the time, as if we don't get already that the water is fucking poisoned with this eel shit or whatever it is that's making the old people stay there longer and get sicker, and eventually you find out what's for. But, like, it's all really obvious and on the face of it. And the first day, you find a little microbe eel in his water, and he just dismisses it. And the only really bad thing is that the audience knows way more and way sooner than the hero does, which he should know because he's the actual one in danger. We're not. So I'm trying not to belabor that same point over and over again, but I just, like, this is the biggest flaw of the movie, and that is the reason I couldn't give it past 3 stars, you know, because this movie is trying to be something, and I feel like Gore Verbinski is made to be... if he lived 50 years ago and making movies, he would be doing movies with Fritz Lang and shit. That's how good he is as far as cinematic eye. Like, I think that's how good he could be. And he clearly loves the horror genre and that style of it, you know, and at least action too, right? So I think that he belongs in a Frankenstein movie. He belongs to me. He's like, he could be the next Tim Burton, maybe, without so much of the Tim Burton-y stuff in it, you know, without being too kooky about it, but he could be, like, fucked up about it. And this movie's definitely a lot of fucked up scenes. Like, as far as scenes go, I mean, if you haven't seen the movie and you're still listening to this and you're wondering, you know, whatever, I'll just listen to it and see if I want to see it. It's hard to recommend this movie, because even though I'm, like, you know, coming all over this guy's eye for imagination and ingenuity with the camera and the framing and everything, yeah, it's all there. It's all true. But again, since the movie is very shitty and very other large aspects of it, I can't really recommend it without saying, like, hey, caveat number 1, 2, and 3, you might be, like, sick of the plot, because there's almost no plot, or it's too plot heavy when there's no story or something like that, you know. And it's 2 hours long too. This movie's not short. I will say this, though, as a plus for the film, I was always intrigued, even though I saw the whole thing coming, like I said, and there's this scene with this whole thing when he meets the only young person besides the head doctor. The only young person is this teenage girl he meets there. Apparently, she just lives on the grounds, and you find out through, you know, through time that she is the daughter of the main what turns out to be the bad guy, the head researcher of the facility guy. So you meet her, and the way she is introduced and the way her plot starts mingling with the main character doesn't really make sense, and the movie starts playing fast and loose as to the science of the movie. Now, the science isn't realistic, of course. It's make-believe. He's essentially a Bond villain with extra steps on the fantasy scale, and it involves eels, and it involves like long-lasting life, like a potion basically that's made the daughter and the father, you know, living forever. They've been living centuries, you know. That's the big twist of the movie, I guess. They've been living for a long time in search for something that'll create them to make a baby. It's really creepy. This movie's creepy, and it succeeds in that for sure. So if you're looking for something that'll fuck you up like that or creep you out, this movie will succeed. Fuck the plot. Don't even look at it for that. Just look at it for its body horror for sure, and its creepiness and its thematic stuff, especially by the end of the film where, you know, she's getting married and she just got like her period, and it's like weird and fucked up, and that stuff does exist. But again, it comes with fast and loose morals about what its characters are actually doing, what they're supposed to be doing. Like if they do one thing before and that shows what kind of character they are, but they're doing something different later on just for the sake of the plot, that doesn't really hold up for me. And I don't think it'll hold up for you either. So with that in mind, you might have to kind of turn your brain off a little bit as far as good stories go. Let's see what else here. And so the plot that goes to the end of the film is that he, something about like the past, this past king, you know, which is the same guy, the lead, Volmer is his name, the lead doctor. Jason Isaacs plays him. He's a great actor. Him and his wife-to-be slash daughter, Hannah, they've been living for a long time, and he has this thing about purebloods. He's essentially the Slytherin from Harry Potter, and it's all about the true blood, and so the purebloods of it all, and how he wants a son or a daughter, I guess, the next generation to be from the same blood of his own, and that's the creepy part that leads to the ending. But by the time it gets to all that, we see our main character, Lockhart. Keep forgetting his name. That's what I'm pulling the IMDb up now. Anyway, Lockhart is his name. By that time, he had been... he has gone through some horrible things. Horrible things to the point where either I would have thrown myself off one of the cliffs there, because it's on the cliff edge there on the Swiss Alps. I would have thrown myself off in suicide, or I would have done an actual valiant attempt to escape and not what he was doing, which is saving his job, because he's sent there to retrieve this... older executive that kind of fucked up on his company and went over there to stay, you know, to get cured, but eventually, you know, got himself more sick, because that's how the place is built, to get you more sick, to steal your lifeblood, so to speak. So that all happens. He goes there, he tries to get him, but there's like a lot of like wishy-washy twists about him being dead or not there, and then being like lucid and understanding of the business side of the of what Lockhart is saying to him, and then retrieving back to No, I'm here for the treatments, and it's like all normal here. And like, and the movie's there is doing those things to confuse Lockhart, but it's not doing anything for us as the audience. And unfortunately, Lockhart does not serve as our audience surrogate very well, because like I said, it's very clear and it's two-dimensional. We can see it right through it. And it's also doesn't make any sense either. There's this part where you understand that the eel juice, so to speak, the eels that get thrown into their water supply of all the residents there, that makes them basically go fucked up and get, you know, not crazy per se, but like docile and life force draining. Like that stuff gets shoved, literally shoved down Lockhart's throat by the third act, when he's like truly discovered and the bad guy, Volmer, is like, okay, I'm the bad guy, now you know me, okay, and now I'm going to tie you up and feed you this shit now. But by the time that happens, like we're supposed to understand that he is going to be the docile resident like everybody else, and then the movie for no reason shifts again, and he like takes everything back. He finds his resolve again, out of nowhere. He's like, he had this very cool, like, I thought this was going to be the ending of the movie, or at least the ending of him, where they had this cool, like, Shutter Island-esque bench sitting thing where he's like out of it. And the girl's trying to talk to him, Hannah, who has been there for a long time and is not never wanted to be a part of this crazy plan to mate with her father and wants to get the fuck out of there and never has. Try to talk to him like, hey, what's the plan? You're going to get me out of here and all this stuff. And she's intrigued by him because he's the only young person, meaning maybe strong enough to fight the effects maybe or to get her away from him. But either way, she goes to him and they have the Shutter Island-esque thing where he clearly looks fucked up and not able to do anything and into the program. And then again, the movie, like the next scene, he gets out of it, snaps out of it at the night of the wedding and then goes and does the final battle with Vollmer. And it's, again, I don't mind the battle. I don't, if that's how it has to end. If it has to end with a happy-ish ending where the bad guy, you know, loses, that's fine with me. It's just how it gets there, it really makes no sense. And it defies like reason or logic or explanation or anything, really. And even though I'm not a big, I don't have to have complete logic and everything, but the movie really breaks its own rules on how the science of the film works and the magic of the film works, or the rules of the particular film works. And it fails miserably there. And so we get this ending where the ending is also kind of lackluster in itself, even if you didn't have that other stuff, where basically Vollmer pulls his face off, right? And this is the final battle. And it's like, oh, no, he's stopping me from fucking my daughter. Weird again. But he's stopping me. And he pulls his face off, or his face gets pulled off, and it's all burnt and weird. And he becomes like this green monster dude. And out of nowhere, he went from this character actor I've seen in many, many things, and he's like always either the really great bad guy. He actually plays Lucius Malfoy in the Harry Potter movies, or he'll play like a good person in another film I can't think of right now, or another show, for example. And he's a really great actor, and he goes from that to like some faceless monster where I literally could not give two shits about, and like he becomes an alligator or that you have to flush down the toilet again. I don't know who does that, but that's the first thing that came up in my head. Because he literally goes into a vat of, or like a little lake of eels, and he gets killed by these carnivorous eels that have been living for 3,000 years. And it's a cool scene. All this stuff looks beautiful, man. But like, again, the way the film just completely does not understand the tone, not the tone exactly, but the characters and how the horror would pay off with the humans in them, not with the magic of this voodoo doctor shit going on. Like, it just, it's a big misstep. And that ending is, that's why it feels lackluster. And that's why the first half of the movie will always reign over the second half for me, because at least at that point, you're there for this wild body horror ride until it ends. And then once it gets resolved there at the end with the fire and the fighting, and, you know, you're just like, whatever. It's a meh ending, unfortunately. Again, I don't want to retract. Let's talk about some of the good stuff here. The body horror, man. I'm into body horror. Not like super personally or anything. And that's like my favorite go-to horror film genre or subgenre. But it's really like the intubation scene with the eels. And it does not hold back. Gore Verbinski does not want you to shy away. It is like, you know how The Office is for awkward moments? This is it for body horror moments. It does not, it forces you to watch it. Like when you think they're going to cut away, no, there's an extra 3 seconds to that normally cutaway scene. And like there's a scene where they drill right through the middle of his front tooth, and it's as horrifying as you can possibly imagine. In the very moment of it, of course, it's not like I felt the pain or anything, but like it's cool. I mean, it's cool in the, you know, I went there to see body horror, so clearly I got what I wanted. And there's a bunch of little things like that that play really, really well. And not to mention some of the background stuff. Like the visions are really beautiful, and the corridors can be equally creepy to like museum-esque. You know, it feels like you're walking down a very expensive place, a castle, a real castle, because it is a castle. And you feel like you're walking through these places, and it's all shot very well. And again, like I will never take that away from this movie. But still, it's hard to recommend the guys. So I think that's it. And as far as the acting goes, per se, like in a particular fashion here. Jason Isaacs does kill it up until the end, like I said. But Jason Isaacs is really cool. I like him a lot. He, if there is a character that does its best about like showing their true colors until the more appropriate time, he does the best. Now, you feel that he's the bad guy the whole time. And there's a moment like before halfway through the movie when you like know for sure, like, okay, he's just fucking with you, dude. He's lying to you. He's clearly the bad guy. But Jason Isaacs' acting performance in the film does almost enough to get you going enough where like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I can still see something, or like, you know, like he's just a doctor, you know, with weird science, you know. Trying to do good. And Dane DeHaan, he's also like very a strange actor for me, because he feels like he is this close to becoming a huge star. Like he could be that huge star, or I don't know if he is or not. And as far as Hollywood goes, I don't even know if he has the physique for it, but not that I care about that personally, but let's just say he does. But I feel like he's almost there, like another one, two more movies, and he'll get that stardom, so to speak, to do movies like anything he wants, where he'll be the leading man. And he's the leading man here, but this movie didn't make much money. It's not an indie film either. It cost a lot of money. It kind of spent a lot of money. It did not gain back, unfortunately, and I was one of the very few people in that movie theater seeing this movie. But Dane DeHaan does a good job overall, I think, way better than his, like, X-Men 2 movie, or for sure. But, still not rivaling Chronicle for me, but I have a soft spot for Chronicle. Always will have. But yeah, this movie is kind of has, like, a 47 Metascore, for example, which is kind of fitting. I would add a few more. I would put over 50, you know, just because, like, the visuals are very stunning. They are really great. I will never say no to that. So that's my review of A Cure for Wellness. So hopefully this review, solo cast, makes sense to you. I was thinking of like, how should I approach this? Should I ask myself questions and then answer it, maybe in a slightly different voice? And then I realized I don't have that kind of power on the fly to change voices in different trebles or whatever the fuck they're called. Yeah, so I didn't do all that. So I spared you that, folks. But hopefully you've enjoyed this. Please let us know what you think. Send us an email. That'd be great. Also, if you prefer the main cast, solo cast, maybe I'll do this more regularly. I can do one of the three reviews by myself. And I'll write more notes about it, because I didn't write anything on this. This is all very sudden that I had to, you know, do the solo cast. So normally I would do more writing and more notes on it, so I can actually have clear thoughts on the fucking film. But hopefully I gave you a clear enough picture about overall what this movie felt and what this movie does and how it succeeds or fails in its genre. So, yeah, that's our Cure for Wellness. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to review with Roth, I promise you. Roth and I are going to review Logan, which is out now, very much now, in theaters right now. And we liked the film, so find out how we liked it, how much we liked it. So stay with us.
Hey there, Mr. Monson. You understand you're trespassing right now, right?
I have an easement with the previous owner of your property.
Previous being the operative word. Who's this?
This is the guy telling you to get back in your nice truck. Go play Okie Dickhead somewhere else.
Hey, Carl. It looks like Mr. Munson hired some muscle.
Looks that way.
He's a friend of mine.
Friend with a big mouth.
I hear that a lot.
And you probably hear this, too.
More than I'd like.
And you know the drill. I'm gonna count to three, and you're gonna start walking away.
I got rights to this one.
One.
I have a lawyer now.
Two.
Three.
You all right, boss?
You know the drill. Get the hell out of here.
In the twilight years of the X-Men, Professor Xavier and Logan are living in hiding when a strange young mutant upends their lives with the forces chasing her. It is Logan, the latest James Mangold film, the man who directed, I believe he directed 310 to Yuma, which I really love. I think he did Copland, right? And, well, more recently, I guess, as far as Marvel stuff goes, he directed The Wolverine, the one where Logan goes to Japan.
Hi.
Which is one of the better films coming out of the Fox Studios.
Yes.
Interpretations of X-Men and their characters. Not a great ending, but as a really, really good first and second act that I found really refreshing and amazing. So anyway, he returns again with... he's clearly this director, who I believe wrote the film too, right? Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, he did. And yeah. A bunch of other people. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He must be really fascinated with the idea of Logan. As many people are, he is probably the most favorite X-Men. Maybe the most favorite of all superheroes.
Sure.
Except for maybe Batman and Superman. Like, if there's a third place,
hey,
might be Logan.
He also directed Walk the Line.
He did Walk the Line, yes, that's right.
It's a big movie.
Yeah, I think he was nominated for Best Director, I'm sure, that year.
Pretty sure.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting when a film director who normally doesn't do, although he's kind of unpredictable because he's done, like, he dabbles into violent films sometimes, like Hopland or like I said, 310 to Yuma, for example. But either way, he's not notoriously known for, like, Marvel movies or, like, superhero movies or action films, but he's done them, so. Anyway, but he's clearly into the whole Logan mythology and what is the man behind the claws, right?
Yes.
So, let's start with what we think of the film without getting too much into the spoilery aspects yet.
I am super glad this movie has a rated R
rating. Oh, man. I've never been so excited for a rated R superhero movie.
I mean, Deadpool did an amazing job, but this movie makes the character so true of what he needs to be. They drop motherfuckers and fuckers and fucks like every sentence in the beginning of the movie just to tell you, hey, this is what you're in for, right? And
they do
a great job of, like, just overall, like, expressing emotion properly with a rated R emotion, you know, thing. Not having to fumble with words. Like, he's a man who just doesn't give a fuck anymore. And I'm really glad to see this, that embracing that superhero movies can be in a rated R feature and not just this PG land, you know, or PG-13 land, should I say.
Right, it's funny because the movie is doing what Zack Snyder tried so hard to do with the Superman reincarnation and the Batman v Superman film, where, you know, it's the dark, gritty, not necessarily realistic because they're not realistic.
Sure,
but like the dark, gritty, you know, are those movies rated R too? I think they are, right?
No, I think they're PG-13.
Really? I can find out. Some of that violence seemed a little too much for me, but not for me, but like for PG-13 rating. But even so, it seems like they're aiming for that direction. If it's PG-13, it's because they want more audiences. It's fine.
PG-13.
Okay, my bad then. But anyway, that's what they're going for, right? No matter what, anyway.
Sure.
But I love how if there is one character that deserves a rated R rating is Logan.
Yeah.
And I love the title. The title fits perfectly because it's basically all him, and it's very, very unabashed about the character's flaws. Like, his flaws are almost take center stage over his what makes Logan a good man. You know,
I love that his flaws is a flaw that it's always the same flaw he's had since we've met Logan, the character Wolverine.
Right.
And it's something that he's just never been able to get over himself. And it's something he's tried so hard. I mean, I'm sure many, many, many years he's tried to.
Right.
And it's something that he just can't get over it. Something new always comes up where every time he thinks something can happen well for him, he just can't get over that. And that's something that's really, that plays super strong in this movie. That's basically the reason of Logan.
Yep.
So, yeah. I mean, I really like this movie.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I would say I gave it 4 out of 5 stars.
Yep.
We just saw it today.
I would give it 2 thumbs up. Yep.
Yep, yep, yep. So 4 total thumbs here. So now let's just say anything we want about the movie. One thing that I wish I did not know, I wish I hadn't seen any trailers. Because the one thing that would love been, because the movie treats it as a surprise when it comes up, and that is the fact that this little girl, Laura, has the same powers as Logan does.
Yeah.
In fact, that's basically his daughter, but genetically made in a lab daughter, sure, like from his DNA.
Yes and no. Yeah.
More yeah. Like, I mean, the mother. I mean, she had a mother, but it was like all you know, exactly. Never left the same building,
exactly,
for example.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but it's from his DNA, and I wish we didn't know that. I wish I didn't know that going into the movie, because it would have been a nice surprise, because the way, like, it's treated to her reveal of what she can do,
yeah,
it's shown to be a badass moment, and if you hadn't known that, that would have been even more badass.
I agree.
To see.
Yeah, I agree.
So, my one thing about it.
Yeah, sure. I honestly think it's just Fox needs to show. They wanted people
no,
in the
yeah,
seats.
And they did tie some other stuff that I was surprised about. Like, I didn't know about the state of the world the way it is, because in the trailers they show basically the dystopian future for mutants, if there is such a thing, because the world has continued on, and the world is in a future where it's oddly believable. Now, it looks very bleak and dusty. There's a lot of sand everywhere. They're in the South United States. Not South America.
Yeah.
But South United States, it starts on the border of Mexico and the United States, somewhere around there.
El Paso.
El Paso, there you go. It starts there and it goes up north and eventually. But there's a lot of dust everywhere. So it's grimy, everything's dirty. But the future that it's set, like, there's this scene where they meet this family, this black family, and they get run off the road by an accident, or maybe not accident. And they're all self-driving cars.
Yeah.
It's like this...
Self-driving trucks.
Trucks. Yeah.
The cargo stuff is all being...
All the cargo stuff is self-driving. And, like, little... There's, like, a bunch of little things like that that tell you that this is a future. It's a realistic future. But it's also, like, not a great future.
No, it's not. Know?
It's almost Black Mirror-esque and the near future accurateness that it feels.
Right, without delving into it, because we're just sticking to the characters. Yeah.
I know. But I think that kind of stuff shows... It does a good job of painting a landscape of like where these battlefields are being played. And for them, it might as well be the road or a zombie apocalypse, because they're the only mutants left.
Yeah.
The two heavyweights left on the planet is Xavier and Logan, and this other third guy, which I know nothing about that character, the one who can sense other mutants.
Everything you saw about him is pretty much true.
Yeah, but whatever, I don't know him, so I can't put any emphasis on that.
Sure.
But this is the last three mutants ever, give or take. And Logan makes sense that he's still around, because he's ages slow.
Logan, yeah.
And,
his healing factor.
Right, his healing factor. So yeah, all this stuff is presented really well. Patrick Stewart really kills it in this movie. And once he dies...
Spoiler.
Oh yeah, we're in that now.
Sure.
Once he dies... because, like, when I see Logan coming in, I'm like, first of all, the camera is, when he's speaking, thinking that he's talking to Logan, I'm like, they're focusing too much on him. It's clearly not him. I thought it was going to be one of the soldiers.
Sure, yeah, me too.
And it's, he retracts his claws into him, like, what is going on? I really thought it was him.
Yeah,
like, what
too.
The fuck is going on? And then, they hatched another Logan. Off the test tube floor, and I was like, anything can happen in this movie now. Like, this is clearly the ending movie. Like, whatever they're trying to do, whatever Fox Searchlight or Marvel is going to do with the X-Men universe, like, this is the last chapter in a book where we don't know where the middle chapters are at. You know, what's going on.
Exactly,
middle, right?
Yeah.
So, like, we're just seeing the last chapter, and this is, like, a harrowing, sucky, shitty, because he's, like, Professor Xavier has his own, cross to bear with some horrible thing he did in the past, which we know nothing about.
They hit that majorly.
Right,
but, yeah.
But the important thing is that he's going through, like, maybe stages of dementia or Alzheimer's or some, you know, old person. He's old as fuck, of course. He's like 90-something in real life, too. So, like, yeah, I mean, he's going through some disease, some mental disease. And
the biggest problem is always that it's the most powerful the most powerful mind in the world.
Yeah, possibly the universe.
Yeah, I mean...
And obviously, we see some effects to that.
Yeah.
And some of that stuff works beautifully. Like, one of my favorite scenes is at the hotel.
That hotel.
The
scene
casino.
Is fucking beautiful.
It was amazing.
I mean, it shows a lot of. It shows two huge things for me in that scene. It shows you how far, what's it called, Xavier has gone with his. Like, he just obviously can't. He knows how to turn it on, but he can't turn it off.
Right.
Right. It really shows Logan's resolve, like his ability to be able to withstand something, to take pressure, to take pain, his whole life. It's like, You see everybody else, and everybody else can't even fucking move.
Right, and that's set up from previous movies.
Right, exactly.
Worse movies.
Well, they just stop time altogether, right?
Right.
And which is beautiful, because that's basically what's happening, only the failed effect of it, right? Where everybody's feeling
the painful version.
Exactly, the very, very painful, harsh, realistic version of it. And this is where even the little girl, who she's struggling, she's putting up a fight too, but she just doesn't have that power. She doesn't have the physical strength.
Or possibly the resolve.
Yeah, or possibly resolve, exactly. Oh, and you see everybody else who can't even, they can barely move their eyes. You see this man who, everything in his body, he's already dying. He barely has his healing factor still in him, and he's fucking barely combing through this. Yep. And it's like, I mean, it's so crazy to see it, and him having just, he fucking annihilates just about everybody, actually. He fails to kill one.
Yeah, unless she finishes it up.
Exactly. But it's such a powerful scene.
Yeah, I agree. What I mean by the setup is not the fact that he can do it. Like, yeah, you're right, though. He can't, even when in his prime, Xavier could just stop people mid-stride.
You mean when they do it earlier?
I mean when Logan, this is a shitty recall to X-Men Part 3, X3. The
Days of Future, Last Stand.
Last Stand, thank you. I was going to say, now did we say?
Because we are in that universe.
Yeah, we are in that universe. The Jean Grey's powers are going crazy, and he's the only one who was able to walk up to her because of her immense power, but he's the one who's healing fast enough to be able to withstand the...
Right, exactly.
So, like, I feel like they kind of recall that back without putting attention to it. So, like, stuff like that.
Right.
I saw it possible. So, some of that stuff is treated so carefully, and there is absolutely no shame in the movie making about the consequences. Like, we get immediately after that, we see Xavier, like, feeling what we know Xavier to be, a noble man, to feel really horrible about killing some of those people, because the news thing was saying that, yeah, I think 7 died and 200 were like wounded and that whole thing. I'm like, damn, dude. And he was like, they don't shy away from that. Neither does the killing. I think the killing in the movie, which can be seen maybe by someone who's like a passerby as gratuitous, but I really didn't see it that way. I saw it as like the mutant power of Logan and the little girl, Laura, is that they're animals. Their mutant power is animalistic. They're predators. They even mentioned that whole thing about her extra hook
talent,
thing,
yeah.
Her extra talent thing, which is about the lioness. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, they're lions in a sea of humans with
really
different
are.
Powers. Some of different powers for sure. Yeah. But like, they are constantly being hunted. Like, I treat them like game hunters, and they're after them for the kill, for the head on the mounted wall.
Right.
And that's what Logan and Laura are to
them. They're the big bad wolves.
Yeah, they're the big bad wolves.
Yeah.
And they're immensely ferocious every time. And little girl does not hold back either.
Listen, you walk into their territory, they won't do shit. But the moment you throw a rock at them, oh, they're triggered immediately.
Yeah, they're gonna murder you.
Exactly.
And they're gonna eat you alive. And that's how I felt like, especially in that slow motion scene, we just stabbed me all. Their skulls,
right, even with each other when they first like act with each other, she never fights, backs down with him. Everyone backs down against Logan because they're like, Logan, you're never gonna win.
I love how she just punches him in the face in that one scene when she started talking for the first time.
Yeah,
in the car. Mm-hmm. It was both funny and it totally, like, that's another thing, is that this every character in this film doesn't do anything that doesn't make sense to the character.
Yeah.
Everyone does exactly what you expect them to do based on what they've shown before and how they've been, and in Logan's case, in 7,000 movies has been. So, like, and nothing is done out of class, out of character. Maybe some of the villain stuff is kind of like wishy-washy about that lead scientist guy who at the end, I didn't like this part, at the end, like,
has to
monologue about, like, oh, I was there in the beginning. Like, you don't have to tie it back to anything. But the movie felt like it did, so it was like a one line, so I didn't give it too much thought. If they did a flashback or something,
I agree. And they were just kind of tying in the fact that, like, yeah, the reason there's no more mutants, which we've been hinting at the whole movie, is the fact that this company controls everything already, and they control the supply, the chemicals that goes into our bodies.
Right. And the second I saw Alkali, I'm like, that's a Canadian thing. That's
right,
when
exactly.
He was taken, right, way back.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. From what I briefly remember in my comic book reading days. So I know that they like felt that they had to, but I feel like this movie is, like, it's beyond the comics. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there is no comics. that do any of this material because it's like so. It's so.
Well, Old Man ending. Logan is there.
Yeah, I've heard of Old Man Logan. I don't know if this is that.
That's basically what it is. Like, he's
a future with no mutants, and he meets genetically modified mutants versions.
Not necessarily meeting genetically modified mutants, but he is, like, roaming.
Yeah, he is, like, countryside
the,
and
he's
shit.
He's, like, the last of it.
Yeah, it's almost like the beginning of Wolverine. He's by himself in the woods, and he remember that bear attack. And,
right, exactly.
Like, that's another good thing about that's a great beginning. The beginning of this one is very different, but also it's like so. It's just it punches you in the face in a good way. It shows you like his car being jacked, and he wakes up, and he's in this. He's a limo driver, and he's like trying to make ends meet, and you don't know what's going on, and it feels like you have a lot of questions, and they will get answered, and it does get answered, but the way he treats. Those thugs were trying to steal his car, I should say, his tires. Or his hubcap, sorry. His
rims.
His rims, sorry, rims. Because it's like an expensive car.
Shows how you know anything about cars.
I know shit, whatever. They have wheels and shit. Who cares, an engine.
His chrome rims.
Like the way he reacts to them. Like the bloody violence of that. And also how little his healing factor works without anyone saying a word about it. No one says that point blank about it. We know it from that first scene.
Yeah.
That he's healing very slowly.
Oh, you see scars on him also.
Right. And you see like scars. That scar on his face like is always there throughout the whole movie after that first scene. So you know what's going on, right? So I figure it was very cool. Like just the movie doesn't have to say much. And if anything, Laura doesn't say a word till like towards the end of the movie. Right. And she doesn't need to either.
No, she doesn't.
She's like she's like an untamed wolf, you know, coming from the forest, right. Kind of living in a city for once.
Like you need to earn her respect,
yeah. Right? Or something. I really love that stuff. What did you think about the whole testing stuff that we were showing about the kids and
the
stuff?
The iPhone video.
The iPhone video. Yeah,
I thought it was actually really cool.
I fell for it.
Yeah, so did I. It was really. It shows you, like, what ended up happening. It gives you this cool backstory about, everybody's dead, but we have their genetic DNA. And that's how we're remaking these people. And you can obviously see it from certain people. Like, the guy who can freeze things is obviously Bobby Frost's thing, you know.
Right, yeah.
You know, you see telekinetic powers, or I think it was telekinetic powers, from one of the kids.
Oh, the one who rips the other guy apart with sticks or something?
No, that's a different one. Okay. That's a different ability. But I was talking about the guy who flips the car over.
Oh, yeah. No, it seemed like he was controlling Earth.
That's what I said. Okay. Right, but then two of my friends that I saw it with were like, those telekinetic powers. And I was like, I saw Earth being
lifted. He could just lift the car then.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So I think he's an Earthbender.
I think he's an Earthbender also.
Yeah, he's an Earthbender.
All right, cool. You see like those abilities. So you see like where kind of they can kind of come from. And obviously, healing factor from what's her name.
Yeah.
So, but the big difference is, I fell for it completely, and I love that the big tie though, is that she got to meet who her father is. She got to not only know who her father was, because everybody probably does know, like you could know the name of who your person came from, but you got to know who your actual father was, even if it was for
a week.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean it's a powerful thing, right. And that's why you.
And if anything,
that's why it kind of falls really true.
Boiling the movie down to its parts, is essentially a road trip movie with a lot of action in it, and
essentially,
it's funny how the emotions of the characters is what creates the problems in this movie. Like, I'm not saying that Logan never gives a shit. He does give a shit, but he mostly doesn't. But the fact that
he's just tired of giving the shit.
Right, he's tired. I mean, I don't blame the guy. He's lived for hundreds of years by now. I don't blame him at all. But like other things, fact that Xavier really needed that rest and really needed that home life again a little bit.
Yeah.
And that home-cooked meal and a good conversation that I actually kind of fell for. Like, I was, like, into that conversation at the dinner table a little bit. And like, oh, man, I was just worried the whole time. What is Laura going to do? she's going to bring out a claw. I was thinking something bad, not something, like, good bad. And then what's beautiful about that scene is that the camera, like, you're seeing them having a great time. They're having dinner, and the camera pans over to the. You don't see anything, but it pans over to the empty outside, and you know that they're coming.
Yeah.
And the camera says all of that, like, okay, yeah, this is fun, but they're fucking these people up too, because look at this, and they're doing it because of of emotion. It's not like a rational reason. If they were rational, they would always be on the move. Yeah. They would have done. They would have thought about like their kidnapped friend.
Yeah, the very rational person here is Logan the whole time.
Right. But no one lets him. Which is, I mean, good and bad, because he's trying to save his soul, not just his life here.
Yeah, and that's actually a very key thing about this movie.
Right, he's always been the warrior.
Right, everything falls on his shoulders. Yeah. It's about saving his soul.
He's like nature's soldier.
And he's a lot older than 100 years old. He's like...
Oh, yeah, I said a couple hundred, but...
Oh, yeah, a couple hundred. Yeah. No, you're right. He's like, you know, Plymouth Rock old.
That old?
I would say, yeah.
Plymouth Rock?
I would say,
that's more than a couple hundred, rough.
I would say that's about
that's
right.
That's like, what, 600 years old?
Maybe 500, but he's around that.
Okay. All right. Damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's old.
God, puberty must have sucked, because it would last like 500 years.
Probably last 50.
Maybe not. Maybe like 50 years, but it will last a long time. Yeah. I totally get that. So you're saying about the key? I don't know what else you're saying about the soul thing. What were you saying?
No. That's a key thing to the movie. Also, is that we're getting from his character is a release, right? Because you know, spoiler alert, at the very end, what happens with Logan is that he finally dies. It's a movie where we
right.
use
and both. There is no bullshit about it.
There's
either.
No bullshit about it.
There's
either.
No like lifting of the rocks at
right.
the end.
Right. Everyone was looking fucking intently at those rocks.
Right. And I was thinking like the only way I would accept a Logan's return, Logan's yeah. run, Logan's return, is if like I first I thought she was gonna let him die there because they were being chased away, the kids. So they left them there and they do like a fast speed of like 5 years. Him rotting there and then slowly healing back from the rot and through the ground.
Yeah.
I would love to see like a time spec crazy fast, like sure. of him very slowly healing
yeah.
back to life again. I think, and when like he has to like take off all the roots off him and right. whatever grows over him.
Yeah.
I think that would have been something. But other than that, I did not want another Last Stand and shit.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
So I'm glad they just finalized them.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but ending it with the fact that, that he could end with relief, right, of himself.
Yeah.
His biggest problems with himself, mm-hmm. and kind of like redeeming himself, right. and coming out that like he had purpose. Cause that was a big thing. He like his whole life has been what's my purpose. He never thought and every time he would think he'd get it, he'd lose it, and just coming out like the very end.
Like he was smart enough to know that he needed a purpose, but not smart enough to always know what it was.
Right, exactly. And I love his last line where it's just like, huh, so this is how it feels.
Right, that was a great line.
Fucking beautiful line.
It was a beautiful line. That was so good. And Hugh Jackman really pulled that off in a much better way than any of his other Wolverine stuff. Yeah, it was so good. That line was the line that like, okay, perfect. This is good.
Countless of lives he's taken.
Countless
of times he should have been dead.
Yep.
I mean, coming back from decapitations, basically, and shit like that.
Yep.
I mean, he's experienced the pain of death, but he's never experienced death.
Right. It clearly is the difference in feeling is there. The idea of sinking in or feeling the warmth coming over or whatever people say death is.
Whatever people say death is.
Like, whatever that was, he was actually feeling it then, whereas before, he's like, it's light's gone until he comes up again, or not even light's gone.
Yeah,
and like, you know,
it's just like ow, okay, right? Because he always feels pain.
Yeah, and he usually heals pretty fast. Yeah, that was crazy. And what did you think about the magic bullet thing? Because you know, before that time, we were led to believe that it's with the healing factor, it is impossible to kill him, and that's why movies like The Wolverine or I can't think of another movie, but I know there's been comic books about it, where they try different things to kill someone with a fast healing factor, like, or even Deadpool too, right? He's one of them too.
Sure.
You know, it's to sap his power, take his adamantium out, or put it in, or something, right? Something
yeah.
really bad that he can't heal fast enough from. They think of that stuff, but it never seems to work. And adamantium bullets. Did you fall for that overall? I mean, did it bother you at all? Because I felt like they needed something.
Yeah, I think. I will take it just for the fact that the thing I don't like about it is like it kind of just goes through him. So theoretically, he should heal that.
Right. That's what I was thinking too.
Right, but if it were to stay in there, it can't heal around it because it's something that can't be destroyed. The adamantium, right? Compared to the other thing, it just gets pushed out. Yeah. This is just going to get embedded in there.
When they use it, when the girl uses it to kill the fake Logan,
yeah,
the Fogan, The Fogan, yeah. Him and his whole other side blows out, and he seemingly dies. He doesn't.
Yeah, he loses like half his head.
Yeah, he loses half his head. But it's interesting because the only reason I bought that ultimately is because the first time that Logan incapacitates the fake Fogan, he pins him and right through all these like things jutting out through his body, and he shoots him point blank through half his face. Right,
yeah.
Like it's his whole eye. Like nothing. But he stays there until they inject him to come back again, which makes me think that he is. That's how much of a Fogan he is. Maybe
that's
he's
how
not.
Much of a Fogan
maybe
is,
his
yeah.
healing factor isn't as great as
I agree.
Was.
And I love.
And if Logan had tried it on himself, maybe he
and
never
I love
healed.
Even though he was a younger version of Logan, or like the prime Logan, if mm-hmm. you want to look at it, right?
Yeah.
A real Logan, old man Logan, mm-hmm. Still did a better job fighting him because he is the more skilled one.
He's had so much years.
He's obviously the more skilled. Yeah. Even though he was dying, even though he was everything.
Yeah.
And this shows
even
again,
the girls had a better job.
It shows there again the resolve.
Yeah.
He's got a resolve that like he just has that willpower. Yeah. He can go through it. And that shows a lot of things, especially when they fight the first time where he's like, what the fuck am I looking at? And then right. he's like.
I love how those events that came together the way it did because as the cars kept coming up. And all those the neighbors of that new family that they were visiting, the way they came back, I'm like, this is so oddly placed, but it makes sense. And
yeah.
I was surprised at how many, what a perfect storm of shit that had to happen for them to have enough leeway to get away. You know, because that's another thing. Like, how do you convincingly get away from all these people and Fogan too?
Right.
Distract the Fogan with all these extra goons, kill the entire family, have one of them come back, which you know it made sense at the time, and reveal like, you know, the explosives of the guy, which is another set of distractions of the mutant killing himself. Like that was all like I was really well placed and like really well.
Yeah, I agree.
Thought out. I thought that was really cool. So other than the brutality of the action, did you see anything that you particularly enjoyed about it, the action?
I mean, I just thought that it felt real to the character. I mean, everything that he did, mm-hmm. everything that he was, how they were, the executions were, because they were fucking executions.
Yeah, they were. I remember the first time I felt like Logan, like the Wolverine was a badass was in X-Men 2. United X-Men.
Yeah, I agree.
Is because that first time because the soldiers infiltrate the school, right? And it's nighttime, and Logan's the only adult there. All the kids, all the high schoolers are there,
right.
And he's telling them get the fuck out of here, whatever. And he just goes up and kills like three of them, like the way he does normally. And it isn't super bloody or gory because it's PG or PG-13.
Yeah,
they don't show a lot. For some reason, they never got as good as that as far as Logan's abilities. In the moment of his mutant powers, or not even about mutant powers, just the fact that he can do those things and he's able to execute with such conviction. Like, I think this is the only movie I've ever seen that, like, take that and heighten it the way it did. And I think the rated R actually fits this movie so well. I cannot imagine this movie
not rated R.
Yeah. It's like Sin City, right? Try to imagine that with it. Like, it just can't happen.
You can't, yeah.
So yeah, I think this movie it fit everything for me, and I don't think 20th Century Fox or whoever is owning these properties is gonna do a better job anytime soon. I wish maybe they could, and there is that Deadpool thing. Did you get that Deadpool pre?
Yeah, pre thing.
Yeah.
which is like showing everything.
Oh, the movie theater with Logan in the back, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, for those who may not know. When you go watch the Logan in theaters, there's this a short film, essentially. The way Pixar has their short films before the movie, they have this short where some guy's being mugged or something, and he's yelling and being tortured, essentially.
Yeah.
And Deadpool sees it, and he goes into a phone booth to change, but he's taking forever. By the time he gets out, the old man's dead. His groceries are on the floor, and it's like this big funny thing, and it's self-aware and all that.
Yeah.
And this is like Deadpool coming back, but not soon enough or something.
Something like that.
It was funny. Anything else you want to mention about Logan? Like, what did you think of Laura's performance?
I was about to mention it. Yeah. I think she did a great job.
It's all physical.
Even the emotions at the end, I think she pulls it off. Because she plays almost a different character towards the end where she kind of like lets her heart open, I guess, or lets someone in.
I would say that maybe one small weakness of the film is that there isn't... enough for me to, because the movie explains through that iPhone video that they've been sheltered their whole lives. I mean, for worse, surely. They were tested constantly. I mean, you see that video of her literally being cut open to see how fast she heals. Like, that's not good.
Yeah.
But she's living in this place. How is she so? At first, I was like, when she's in that convenience store, for example, and she is. I know she's a child, but she seems. I don't know. It's hard for me to explain what I'm thinking about exactly, but I feel like they skipped something, or they didn't show enough to show.
I hear you. How does she? How can she drive? How can she do this? How can she?
Yeah, I know that a lot of her confidence comes from the fact that she's always been the winner in a fight because she can fight, and she has no, like, they're bad guys. She even says in that one scene, like, they were bad men, right? And he was saying he was talking about the real weight of taking life. The way he did it, and how she reveals it to be, well, I take life from bad men. They were bad men, but he's like, well, there's still something there. And I know she's not getting that yet, but in the movie, I think she gets it. But
Xavier tries to explain it with that old movie.
Yeah, with that old movie too. Right? Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. The Western film. He was watching like three Western films. They skipped around. It wasn't all one movie.
I thought it was one movie.
I don't think so. Anyway, I'm pretty sure the first time wasn't a movie, and then by the end it was Shane.
Is that Shane?
Yeah, it was Shane. Okay. Yeah, the little boy crying. Yeah, that's a very famous scene. Watch Me Be Wrong. It's the same movie. I don't know. Something on the language of the film kind of made me lose some of that traction there about the girl's ability to do these things in social context or in a context of, like I'm surprised that I didn't see her, like, always hunker down away from every person, every stranger around her, that it wasn't Logan or Xavier. And even then, you know. And then... But also, like, if she was able to walk among them, like, just the way she was acting, more cavalier than I thought a little girl like her would be. But
I forgave it because she's an alpha, and she walked around like, I own this bitch. You can't do anything to me. Like, I'm not going to win. You're not going to win.
Are you surprised those many kids got out of there? How many kids did they have there that many got out?
I mean, it looked like a lot more, especially when they're running in the forest.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wasn't surprised because it was, like, the whole nursing staff that helped them get out. They released at least like 8 children.
They did like a buddy
children.
System thing.
Right, exactly.
Oh, God. Can you imagine all those nurses that didn't make it? Because none of them were there.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So.
That sucked.
Yeah, it did, but hey.
Yeah. And also the whole idea of corporations seeing these specimens as intellectual property, very gross and not very cool, makes you instantly hate them. It's like a very fast way to make villains out of them. But that's always been X-Men's motif. The corporations are the villains and the politicians are stupid or something.
Sure, yeah, that's true.
I think the acting is really the best thing about this movie. Like, the story is, it is simplistic overall. The themes of it is more complicated, which is about death, which is about regret, which is about the purpose of Logan, the purpose of Xavier even, in his dementia-ridden life right now, and trying to find hope. Like, his idea to still search for hope in the most hopeless aspect of his life, the way his mind is working, which is not working, the way his caretaker doesn't give a shit, the way he lives, the way he has to take his medicine, like, he's still looking for that hope that he's always been searching for. And adhering to when he was a professor. Like, all that stuff is still there for that character. He still wants it. And he does get a sliver of that before he gets killed, which is good. And the worst part is that he was saying those things to what he thought was Logan, but it wasn't Logan.
Yeah.
I felt that's another regret, that Logan will never hear those words.
Yeah, you're right.
Not completely, anyway.
Right.
He hears the tail end. So that kind of stuff is just very human, very cool. Like, it's the most human mutant movie ever because, well, in the end, these are all fantastical creatures, but it's so cool.
Right. Well, and also, it brings up a big thing is also the theme of every X-Men movie, where it's like, mutants are humans also. They just have abilities that these regular human don't.
Like, we wouldn't shoot people if they had, like, 200 IQ.
Exactly.
Or if they had, like, an extra bone in their socket that made them run faster or something. You know, like,
right.
Because that happens today, right? We don't treat them any. I mean.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, we'll hire them for Olympics, right? But otherwise. Which is a good thing. So, I don't know. That's weird. I know. I'm with you. That's the Incredibles thing, too, right? That problem with the villain. Anything else on Logan? You want to say?
It's a great movie. I mean,
was there a post-credit sequence?
Did you no, say? There wasn't anything.
Okay, good. I didn't say.
Run P said there wasn't anything. That's why they had the thing in the beginning. It's also not a Marvel movie. It's a Fox movie. So.
Well, that's why. I mean, I heard the Johnny Cash song and then I left. Because it's a good song.
Good ending for a song.
Yeah, it's also in the trailer.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. That's cool that they put it in there at the end. Sorry, you were in the middle of it. Did you have anything else?
No, I had nothing. Overall, everything was really cool. There's one thing that they bring up. They bring up a lot of the things that are going on in the world without actually showing it to you. Mm-hmm. All the little radio scenes, the Reavers, people with, like, mechanical arms. These are the things that, like, people who hate mutants, like, literal hate mutants, right? Yeah. But they still use mutants to catch other mutants. Like,
yep.
It's a funny thing.
Very heroes, too, a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. So we highly recommend Logan. It's in theaters right now. It's out this weekend. Check it out. And that is it for our show. You have been listening to another movie podcast. Remember, tell us what you think on these films and just your thoughts overall on our amazing performance, I would say, right? Amazing performance. Over at podmoviecast@gmail.com, as well as on Twitter. You can follow me personally on Twitter at Armin Filmmaker. That is Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ruff?
You can follow me at Gamer Ralph. That is with two R's and an F. And you can follow my Twitch at Sue Trauma. Figure out how to spell Sue. That's your problem, not mine. I will be streaming RE7. I'm almost done. I'm halfway, I think. So I'm not almost done. And then I will probably be doing Overwatch as well, and anything in between, but not Horizon, because you should experience that on your own.
Strange thing to add there at the end. I can also follow my movie watching habits on Letterboxd under the same name, Armin Filmmaker. I'm also part of another show, guys. SOS-radio.com is the website. SOS stands for Supernatural Occurrence Studies, where we talk about all things supernatural, from aliens to ghosts to hauntings, possessed people, all the jazz, all the locations in our area. Area, by the way, Chicagoland area. So we travel to other states around us and check out hauntings and stuff. It's really cool. So check that out. Please send us an iTunes rating if you're so inclined. It would give us amazing traffic to our feed if you do enjoy the show. Even if you don't, sending us traffic, I mean, a rating on it will tell others what
the
you think.
The iTunes overlords.
It's the best way. Yeah, iTunes overlord. You know how they are. Remember, we are a bi-weekly podcast. We'll come back in 2 weeks. In that time, we will discuss... we're going to do our first marathon, Ralph. Our first marathon of this new show. Are you excited? Are you ready?
Yes.
Usually marathons are something very strange, something that allows us to watch films that are a type of film or some sort of thematic connection of films where either we haven't seen them or we are joyously anticipating to talk about. I think it will be a great discussion. So the marathon we're going to start doing next time on this show is animated features. We're going to do animated films, and that could be anything. We're not going to cover just Disney guys or Pixar. We're going to cover the world, essentially. I had the boys pick out 5 films apiece.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I did it. We're not going to do all of them because that's like 15 films, but like we'll do like a good chunk of them. I think 4 or 3 apiece for sure. So with that in mind, the next time we're going to review a Japanese animated feature called The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. I'll repeat, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. I think you might find that able to rent. I mean, I bought the Blu-ray on Amazon, so you can do it that way as well if you want to join us in our marathon. But if not, you can always rent it. I think it is available on iTunes. I saw it there once before.
Should be on Amazon as well.
Yeah, and as far as the other film reviews we're going to do for that that show, we're going to do The Girl with All the Gifts.
That's right. The movie's coming out, right?
It's out already. We can rent it today.
Can we?
Yes, we can.
Cool.
So we're going to rent that son of a bitch. We're going to watch it. Ralph and I have been anticipated. We read the book last year.
Yep.
So we can't wait for that. And we'll also review The Belko Experiment.
Okay.
That
yeah, I see it.
Yeah. And that's going to be a day one release, too.
So, thanks. Okay.
Yeah. So we'll try.
All right.
We're going to go for it. Until then, my little cinephiles, I am Oscar.
Ralph.
See you later.
Will you quit it?
What?
I'm trying to swim here. What, the ocean isn't big enough for you or something like that?
Huh?
You got a problem, buddy? Huh? Huh? Do you?
I know nothing of that world, but I know of them. Like the Kardashians, I know nothing about these people, but I know of them.
Right. All I know is that they have huge asses. Some of them look cute, or not cute. Some of them look hot. Others don't. That's it.
Yeah. Right? Right. That's the extent of everything.
That's the extent about that what I should
give
know,
a shit
yeah.
about?
No, people like to know about their lives and how they got there and why they're so popular, apparently.
Hmm.
That's what the show's still on.
Don't they know that's the cycle of seeing them?
Exactly.
It's trying to see mm-hmm. what makes exactly. them popular yep. make is making them okay, right. popular. Okay. Mm-hmm. People know that?
I think they do, but okay. I don't think they want to admit it.
Okay. It's like we're a gigantic camera. We're expecting this family to act like there's no camera there.
Right. Just act normal.
Act normal. Right. This is candid.
Candid.
Act normal. Don't worry about that.
It's
boom
like
mic
remember at the wedding, all the, time. The wedding at the Rick and Morty season 2 finale. There's a camera person like, I'm not staring at you. I'm taking a candid photograph of
you. Yeah,
portrait or something.
Yeah. Also, like Rick and Morty season 3 this year.
I know this year for sure. This year's insane. Have you been watching Legion?
No, I haven't caught up with it. Oh, I've been kind of saving them up.
I haven't seen episode 4 yet, which is the latest one.
Yeah.
But man, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I think you just like that guy from Fargo. That's it.
Actually, there's like 3 people from Fargo on that show.
But the main guy or main guys who wrote it or anything or directed it.
Oh,
or...
Noah Hawley. That's the reason I saw the show. Yeah. Yeah, because he's a cool guy. I mean, he's a cool writer.
No, that first episode was just fucking bonkers. And like,
it does taper off.
No, I'm assuming it does. But like, I have to mentally prepare myself for this show.
No, not so much anymore. But definitely, it does keep you glued. You don't want to watch. It's not a background movie or show. I mean,
no, it definitely isn't. Yeah. And I haven't had time to kind of devote myself for anything. Like the show I've been watching is a total fucking background show. I just watch whenever the fuck I want. You know.
Wait, what that one you?
Yeah, Beastmaster. Yeah, Beastmaster. I literally just watch it and I'm like, okay.
And just look up when someone does something.
Right. I mean, I have Twitch on watching people play Overwatch also and other shit.
This is a disease. Oh, so that's like a new character you showed me, the one you tagged me in?
Yeah. Literally, it was released today. She's in the playtesting. A week or two, she should be out.
Really?
Dang. Maybe less.
So everyone's going to play her. Is it a tank?
She's a tank.
Looks like a tank, yeah.
She's a tank.
Cool.
You want to know the abilities?
No, I wouldn't be surprised. It'll be fun. Oh, because you want to tell me?
Yeah.
Fine, tell me.